Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura.
And I'm Marty.
And apparently Marty is freaking freezing, so I'm just saying.
It's not so bad. Today at the dog show, it wasn't as cold as it was 2 days ago when apparently they didn't have heat in the building. And when it is 20 below, you need heat in the building.
You need heat in the building. It's just, you need heat, period. I think about a lot of things, but 20 below is not really appropriate cold for man nor beast. That's all I got. All I got.
No, because nothing works well.
No, it does not. And we just did a conversation not too long ago about how to keep your pet safe in the freezing, freezing cold mega snowstormopolis.
Right.
But tonight we've got a really super great topic for you guys. We're going to talk about, I don't know if great.
We always have an interesting topic.
It's interesting. I think interesting. Educational? Informational.
Yes.
Informational.
Yes. Yeah.
I think informational. This is a super informational topic because our dogs every now and then, and even our cats, pop up with lumps in their neck, in their jaw, in their ear, all kinds of random places where lumps should not be. And there's a variety of reasons for there to be lumps there, some of which are really bad, some of which are meh, right? So let's kind of walk through the various scenarios in which you wake up in the morning and your dog's normally adorable, sweet, cuddly little face has got a giant, you know, goiter hanging off the side of his face. It's not cool, man. It's not cool.
No. And there are multiple reasons. So the first thing to do is to not jump to the conclusion that it's the end of the world.
Right.
You should call your veterinarian and trot right on in because you shouldn't wait for that to just go away on its own. Because we have clients that do one of two things. Either, oh my God, he's going to die, it's cancer. Or, oh, it's nothing, it'll be fine. It's all fine. And so there's a lot of middle ground in between those two.
A lot of middle ground.
Yeah. So be sure that you call your vet, get an appointment, and realize that in spite of how much swelling there is underneath their neck or on the side of their neck, it generally doesn't cause them any respiratory distress. So as startling as it may be, yes, you need an appointment, but your dog is not going to suffocate in the next 20 minutes if you don't get right to the emergency clinic. So most of these are something that you can call your regular veterinarian, trot on in, have them checked out. And there's a whole multitude of things that can cause those. So where do you want to start?
Let's start with the least life-threatening, but still important and pretty common. So my dog was chewing on a stick and now he has this big thingy bobber on his jaw.
Right. Chewing on a stick, running in the woods with a stick in their mouth, chewing on a bone, any of those things that could cause potentially a kind of trauma into that underneath the jaw area can certainly cause an abscess.
Splinter.
It can cause a hematoma. Yeah, a splinter, a hematoma, or a sialicile. And this
Okay. I know you love to blow up my brain, but I know about lymph nodes. I know about hematomas and abscesses. Hootie-wetsa-wahoo?
A sialicile. It's a salivary cyst. So any of those things that are caused by chewing, it can cause an abscess, which is an infection. Mm-hmm. It can cause a hematoma, which is a blood clot. Mm-hmm. Or it can cause a sialicile, which is a ruptured salivary duct. And then the saliva, instead of it going from the salivary gland, which there's one in the neck and then one under the tongue, it can then cause this pocket of saliva to form either under the tongue, which is called a ranula, or under the neck, which is called a sialicile.
You see my face?
Yeah. And those are actually the least of the serious ones,
right?
But they can be fairly dramatic looking because they can be pretty
scary, kind of scary.
Well, scary, unsightly. Yeah, there's a lot of things that happen with it. So this is where your veterinarian really comes in, is are they running a fever? If they aspirate that, what comes out? Does it come out as blood? Does it come out as pus, which is an abscess? Or does it come out as saliva? And saliva will look the same in a syringe as it will any other places. It's long, stringy, kind of a clear fluid.
Right.
So it's pretty distinctive which of those you have. Now, an abscess, you're typically going to treat with an antibiotic. And my rule of thumb, but not everybody's, is if this comes back for the third time after a round of antibiotics, then I start going to look for a piece of foreign material that's been left behind.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, it disappears on its own or it migrates out on its own. And honestly, those are very, very difficult areas to surgically explore. And there's not a really good way to detect where the foreign body is. Maybe a CT scan would be helpful, but not always. And so you can do a lot of pretty significant disruption if you're surgically just going in and kind of looking around. So I generally don't like to do that unless I can see or feel a tract that's pretty obvious. And dogs will go running through the woods with a stick in their mouth and jam it in their throat or jam it up their nose or jam it up because they're dogs. Nobody told them don't run with scissors. So they do. And they have a wonderful time doing it until they don't. And then it's
everybody has a good time until somebody gets hurt. Isn't that a thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's relatively common because dogs do dog stuff. So if it comes out as pus and you treat with two rounds of antibiotics and it hasn't resolved, if it comes back the third time, that's when I say, okay, it needs to be surgically explored by me, by a board certified surgeon, by somebody that can really adequately look in the area to try and find a piece of plant material. And those can happen in a lot of places, but the neck and throat are fairly common. And even though, like I said, it's pretty dramatic, the amount of swelling that's there, you're not going to have them strangle because they can't breathe. As startling as it seems, they're not going to strangle from lack of oxygen because it's typically off to one side, like you've kind of demonstrated. If it's a sialicele, again, those are surgical corrections, but most of the time I am the conservative surgeon, and I will say, let's just give it some time and see if it will seal over on its own, because most of the time they do. But you know how surgeons are, a chance to cut is a chance to cure.
Right.
So if you get to the vet clinic and the vet clinic sends you to a surgeon and the surgeon is like, woohoo, let's go to surgery. It's $10,000 to do this. You know, most of the time they're going to resolve on their own if you don't mind having your dog look a little funny for a while and it's saliva and it's not serious. If you give it some time, some patience, typically those will resolve on their own. Now, I am not suggesting that you fail to seek veterinary care. I am suggesting that you are conservative in the veterinary care that you seek for ongoing problems.
Sure. And so the important part from what you're saying and from what I understand is that if you wake up in the morning and you got the thingy bobber on the side of the face, get into the clinic as soon as you can. If it's a week, they're not going to, in most instances, be adversely impacted, but as soon as you can.
Yeah, if they're running a fever, I would try to get in sooner than if they're not running a fever.
Okay.
And if they're eating and drinking, eating, drinking, not running a fever, I'd be a little more patient. Not eating or drinking, running a fever, then I would try to get in within 24 hours.
Good. Super good distinction. We will, at some point in some podcast, remind folks how we take our pets' temperatures. But the really simple solution is you have one special thermometer, preferably digital, in your house that says dog on it. And you don't put that in your child's mouth.
No, rectal only. Yeah. Even if you disinfect it, I would not put it in my kid's mouth. And I've had kids and I've had dogs all at the same time. So we're pretty clear on what's labeled. I have pretty clear boundaries on certain things, and that's a big one.
I am not sure that we have a human thermometer. We mostly just have dog thermometers in my house.
Yeah, that might be something to check into and correct that deficit.
Somebody's sick enough, I'll go buy a new thermometer. I mean, it'll be okay.
They're $8. Come on, spring for it.
Okay, so running a temperature, running a fever, temperature is the thing, a fever is what you have. Sorry, I corrected myself. Running a fever, not eating, not drinking is a more urgent situation than otherwise. Okay, beautiful. So what else, what are some of the other, what we think of as differentials, some of the other potential issues that you could see other than, you know, Fido ran into a tree limb with a stick in his mouth?
Well, foxtails in certain parts of the country are a big concern. Now,
100%.
Where I am, we don't see a lot of foxtails in the skin. If we're going to see them in Wisconsin, they're typically inhaled and they cause pyothorax, which is an infection in the lungs. Very serious disease, almost always fatal, very, very, very expensive to treat. But foxtails in a lot of parts of the world where it's dry, where you are.
Speaking for my house.
Yeah, California, Utah, Arizona, all those areas. Foxtails can end up anywhere, in the ear canal, in between the foot pads, in the prepuce, pretty much anywhere. So those you want to be very attentive to. And really be careful where you take your dogs for exercise, because those can be dangerous areas. I have a really good website that one of my clients built called Mean Seeds, M-E-A-N, Seeds, Mean Seeds. Really beautifully done website. It has all the pictures of all the kind of plant material you need to avoid, and pictures of the little barb things and the what the field looks like. So before you go out into a field with those kinds of plant materials, you should bring that up. You can bring it up on your phone. Take a look and see what kind of plant material is out there. And if it's one of the mean seeds, go somewhere else. Yeah. Don't ask for trouble.
And we have a fantastic podcast that I will link in the show notes that is deep dive on the mean seed, because they're terrible. Okay. Running with scissors.
Well, and let's mention the outfoxed hood for dogs.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Because I think that's pretty great. You can buy them on Amazon. You can buy them from their website. But it's called outfoxed, like foxtail. And you can put them on your dog. They come in all the different sizes. So you measure the length of your dog's head or muzzle. And then you can fit those. And they do two things. One is, if your dog is out in one of those fields, it's going to keep them from inhaling one of the weed seeds. It won't prevent them from getting it in their feet or other parts of their body, but at least it'll keep them from inhaling them. Number two is, if you have a dog that you can't trust for 18 seconds without them running out in the yard in eating something that they shouldn't, whether it's fecal material or sticks or in your house eating underwear, whatever it happens to be, they're pretty great at keeping them. Now, you can't leave them on unsupervised. You have to be careful with all the rules, but they're a pretty great tool to keep your dog out of some of those dangerous things that can be very hard to train a dog not to do.
Like a grazing muzzle on a horse. I like it. And they are fantastic in the foxtails. Yeah. I can personally attest to that.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Okay, so if we can rule out foxtail and we can rule out running with scissors / sticks, what would be next on your potential diagnostic survey?
Of things that would cause lumps here? I would be looking at lymph nodes. And if it's one isolated lymph node, then that's frequently a reactive lymph node for something that has caused trauma or an infection in that part of the body. Right. If it's both lymph nodes under the neck, or the lymph nodes under the neck, in front of the shoulders, behind the knees, and in the groin, then we could be talking about something more systemic like lymphoma, which is a very serious kind of cancer in dogs. So if you have any suspicion that there's an enlarged lymph node, you, again, take your dog to the vet. They can aspirate it. They can look at it under the microscope. There's now a piece of equipment called the Imagist, and it's artificial intelligence. It's a microscope that sits on the lab at a lot of vet clinics, not all. But with artificial intelligence, it can read the slide, and then it can send that slide image to a pathologist. And within 4 hours, you can get a pathology report back on what that aspirated lymph node or whatever mast cell tumor, or whatever thing you want to aspirate. So instead of having to wait several days for a result to come back, it's within hours. So it's a super cool advancement with artificial intelligence for veterinary clinics. You can send it in and have the pathologist take a look at it. You can have a biopsy of the lymph node done. So there's certainly diagnostics that can be done so that you have a good resolution for what's causing the problem and where do you need to go as your next step. Is this cancer? Is this serious? Is this localized? Is this, you know, the dog did something stupid and just needs to have a little bit of antibiotic and a little patience and it'll get better.
Okay. Those are really important differences because it all, to the untrained eye or to the instant wake up in the morning reaction, is a little terrifying. Okay. So then let's talk about hematomas, because those are a whole thing unto themselves.
Well, let's mention puppy strangles before we go on.
Oh, just okay. Good one.
Just quickly. There's a little known disorder in puppies. It's called puppy strangles, for sort of a slang term. The technical term is puppy juvenile cellulitis. And it's caused by a pyoderma, which is an infection in the skin. And it's basically an allergic reaction to that. Most commonly seen in golden retrievers, also labs, but a few other breeds as well. I've seen it in standard poodles. I've seen it in golden doodles, labradoodles, all this stuff. I had one of my farm dogs have it. And in that case, it's a young puppy that has enlarged lymph nodes in their neck only. And then they'll have pustules on their lips, pustules on their eyelids, pustules in their ears. It kind of starts at the front of the face, and then it moves back from lips to ears, eyelids, and then ears. It's serious enough that you need to see a veterinarian. They need to be on an antibiotic and a steroid. And that's kind of scary because nobody wants to put a puppy on a steroid until they know for sure that's what they have. But it is not life-threatening, but it can be disfiguring in that it leaves some scarring if you don't get it addressed. And many veterinarians are not familiar with it or are uncomfortable with putting the puppy on steroids. So just be aware that that's a thing. So look up puppy strangles if you happen to have a puppy with those pustules and the enlarged lymph nodes. So now we can go to hematomas.
Okay. So puppy strangles, and talk to us about age, because that's usually really young, right? Eight to 12 weeks?
Six to 12 weeks, yeah, somewhere in there. And they can sometimes be hard to clear up. It can sometimes take a couple courses of medication to get it cleared up.
And what actually causes that?
It's an allergic reaction to the bacteria that are normally on the skin, but we don't know why. There are certain dogs that do that. Recently, we saw one in a young dog that also came in. He was painful, which is unusual. Generally, they don't seem to be uncomfortable. This one particularly came in with pain. He was a golden retriever. I don't really have a good explanation for why, other than they do run a little bit of a fever with it, and he just felt kind of crummy.
Yucky.
So we do know that there's a genetic predisposition. We don't know the inheritance pattern. So anytime you say, we can see this more commonly in this breed than this breed, there means there's a genetic predisposition. So I would just say, if you've had that happen, you don't want to repeat that breeding to the same male and the same female, but it doesn't mean that you have to throw the dogs out of the gene pool. It just means you don't want to repeat that combination.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the more, I'm not going to say shocking, upsetting moments of my life as a dog handler was a Rhodesian Ridgeback client that had an ear hematoma and had to have his ears wrapped. And as soon as he shook his head, blood would fly everywhere, at one point destroying the most beautiful peach Shantung silk suit I have ever owned in my life, because he shook his head and I was sprayed with blood from top to bottom. It was very upsetting.
Yep. So hematomas happen spontaneously in the ear flap. It's usually just one.
Spontaneously? I didn't realize. I thought they usually had to whack it on something.
It can just happen. About half of the time, they don't have an ear infection associated with it. It just happens. Often in one ear, sometimes in both, but not usually at the same time. And again, it's disfiguring in that it leaves scar tissue no matter how you treat it. And there are four treatment options. But historically, they just always end up with some scarring in the ear, a cauliflower ear. What's interesting, though, and you can tell me if you've observed this, is I've only seen it ever one time in a dog with an upright ear.
I've never seen it in a dog with an upright ear.
Uh-huh. I've seen it one time in a Sheltie. Every other time it's a dog
with a pendulous ear. Even then it's tipped. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Most of the time it's a pendulous eared dog. So it's going to be a Labrador, a Golden Retriever, a hound.
Rhodesian Ridgebacks, definitely. I've seen them constantly. Yep.
That's a hound. Bernese Mountain Dogs. So we used to think that they were only associated with an ear infection and that it was caused by trauma from shaking the ear. But a lot of the dogs, probably half of them, come in. We look in the ear canals. There's no evidence of an infection. There's no inflammation in the ear canal. We don't really have an explanation for it. So it just sometimes happens. But you have four treatment options for what you can do. And the more aggressively you treat it, the less scarring you get. But no matter what you do, there's going to be scarring. You can also see it in cats, which I think is interesting because they always have upright ears. And
really?
I don't know why, but cats will get it, again, not necessarily associated with the ear mites or an ear infection. But those are the upright ears that we'll frequently see them in. And you can do absolutely nothing and they will heal. You can take them to the vet and they can aspirate the fluid out. You can aspirate the fluid and inject a steroid. You can place a surgical tube in there, or you can make an incision down the length of the ear and then suture the ear flaps together like you would a quilt and get it to heal. So the more surgical approach you do, the less scarring you get. But no matter what you do, if this is a show dog in particular, they're always going to end up with some kind of scarring, and it's never going to be a normal ear again. It'll be that cauliflower ear like we see in wrestlers for kids. So unfortunately, once they happen, they leave scar tissue. It's tricky. The Sheltie I did manage to treat, and his ears still tipped, which was kind of like, okay, are we going to make him see her perfectly upright, or is it still going to tip when we get done? I'm not really sure because it's not that common. But nevertheless, that's kind of the outcome, is they'll end up with scar tissue regardless. And you try your best, but there's always scar tissue.
Managing hematomas, if you choose not to do surgical, which is the situation I was in that beautiful peach Shantung silk suit, a snood, right? So that little hat that you sometimes put on a dog to keep their ears out of food.
That helps. They actually now make an ear wrap, a non-surgical ear wrap you can buy on Amazon for dogs. You can probably get them on Temu and other places too, but I know Amazon carries them. So it helps to keep the ear flat. When I do, the procedure I usually recommend are either pulling the fluid out and injecting a steroid or putting in a drain tube. And so we'll nick each end of the ear and then slide a tube through it. And then I tape the ear to the top of the head instead of using just an ear flap, because I can get better control with tape. And I will then tape it to the ear, tape the ear to the top of the head, so it keeps the ear level and flat and the compression between the layers as much as possible without actually suturing the layers together. And those turn out reasonably well, but you have to keep them taped to the top of the head for 2 to 3 weeks. And I always, 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 this is just my personal tip, is when I tape the ear to the top of the head, I always put a big note on the ear tape that says, ear, do not cut. Because what I don't want to have happen is that at 2 a.m, this thing is sort of slid off and the owner gets up and they're like, the dog's got the tape over their face. And they're like, oh, I'll just take off the bandage quick. And I don't want him to take the scissors. Because if you amputate the ear, we can't fix
that. That's going to be a problem.
That's permanent.
That's going to be
a trip to the emergency
room. No. Please don't do that.
So I put a big note on it that says, ear here, do not cut. And my staff is always laughing at me because I'll be taping up the ear and I put tape stirrups on. And I'm really good at taping up ears. Most of my doctors struggle a little bit, but I'm really good at taping up ears. And then as I finish up the bandage, they're handing me the marker because they know I will be writing a love note to the next person along, whether it's the vet at the emergency clinic or the client in the middle of the night, that says, the ear is up here. It's not down here. It's not where it should be. Waggle, waggle. You know, do your ears hang low? Do they wobble to and fro? Do you, can you tie them in a knot? Can you tie them in a bow? This one's tied to the top of the head.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I showed a ton of Ridgebacks. So that's my primary experience. Right. I have never had an ear hematoma in a wire hair ever.
Yep.
But we would get them in Ridgebacks. No, I mean, it's the same basic ear. And I am telling you, never in a wire hair. And
they're big, long, floppy ears.
Routinely. And Ridgebacks don't have any bigger ears than wire hairs.
I know,
just
but
routinely.
Why?
I know.
Why do you see them in one, not another? It doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I think maybe the thinness of the ear leather, if I had to guess, like pointers, Ridgebacks, they have a relatively thin ear leather. Wire hair pointers have a thicker ear leather to do their job. But that's just me totally pulling that out of the air.
It's probably true.
Pretty close. The other place that you can see this sort of hematoma / damage / what have you is on the tail. And that can be, a nightmare to manage. Okay. So talk about that a little bit.
You're talking about the crate tail? Those kind
If it's a Ridgeback, they whack it on the door as you're walking through. If it's a Wolfhound, the same thing.
Yep.
It's just
Wolfhounds, Dalmatians, Labs.
Yeah. Labs less because they have a thicker tail. I don't see it as much in Labs and Goldens, but any of the like Whippet, Pointer, Ridgeback, Wolfhound, like long, ropey, skinny tails.
You know, I've never seen it in a Golden. I think the extra feathering just slows it down. Mm-hmm. But Labradors, for sure. Great Danes. Oh, yeah. Dalmatians. We 100%. Have a Dalmatian.
100%.
Yeah. And it is a hot mess when it happens. And they do it. It's crate tail, happy tail. There's a couple different words for it. If they're crated, if they're in a kennel, if they're just really excited and pound their tail.
Going through life, man. Surface. Yeah.
Yeah. And boy, once those start to bleed, again, it's a real mess. So they can be a real challenge. I ended up with one Great Dane that had a tail amputation for it because we just could not manage it any other way.
I've seen it in a Ridgeback. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we usually have to support those with bandaging, and I'll oftentimes take a syringe case, the plastic syringe cases that are big enough around that you can put a couple holes in it for ventilation, and then you wrap the tail with that over it that it serves as a barrier against the bap, 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 bap that you get. Because as soon as you put the dog back in the kennel at the vet clinic or at the boarding kennel or at your house or whatever, the dog starts whacking their tail and it starts to bleed again. So again, those are tricky. They're not life-threatening, but boy, I've had them in my house, and it looks like someone's battered paint in your house. It's a pretty hot mess. Yes. So, yes.
Yes, all of those things. Pro tip. Let's see if you know this pro tip. Maybe I can blow up Marty's brain.
Okay, good try. Go for it.
Okay, we're going to try. You're trying to regrow the hair from where that dog has made an absolute mess. Do you know my pro tip for regrowing the hair?
I have some, but I don't know yours.
Preparation H.
Oh, we use Listerine.
Preparation H works like a miracle.
Really?
I just blew up Marty's brain. Oh my God. It's 1 in 500.
So what does the Preparation H theoretically do to
it? It grows hair. I have no idea. Is it the shrinkage of...
It must work other places then, too. All right. Preparation H is on my shopping list.
I'm just telling you.
Going out as soon as it warms up.
Maybe I could try it on my head. I don't know. All I know is that I had many dozens over the course of time, Ridgebacks and Irish Wolfhounds, both with whacked out tails.
Going on the shopping list right now.
It is very counterintuitive, but it 1000% works. And they can't, it's not going to hurt them. So,
No, it won't. Even if they lick it, it won't hurt them.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, obviously, cleaning it with Chlorhex and, the stuff that you would recommend as a veterinarian, but once you've got it healed and you're trying to get them back in the ring with hair on their tail, or just have a dog with a cute tail again instead of this giant spot.
Bald spot. Yeah.
Preparation H. There you go.
Good to know.
Tiny
good
details. All
right. Anything that helps, man. Anything that helps.
It's not as cool as all the times you've blown up my brain, but I finally scored one.
I'm good. I love sulfur sulfadiazine cream. That's my favorite for mastic, but... Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. And Listerine will do some cool things too. But
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
Chlorhex. I always am Chlorhex until it's healed. And then.
Oh, yeah.
Preparation.
As long as it's not around the eye. Right. Otherwise, Chlorhex is perfect everywhere.
Yep. All right. Well, there we go. We have blown up everybody's minds. We have dropped some little gems and pearls into the ether. So y'all, you just, what you need to do, man. That's all I'm saying. You need a thermometer and you need some Preparation H.
That'll get you a long way. It's like
WD-40. Long, long ways in the dog world. I'm telling you.
All right.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, there you go. Thanks a lot, Marty. Stay warm tonight. I know you have some pretty exciting travel coming up. You're going to New Zealand. I'm super jealous. Yep. And you and I will be together this weekend coming up in Manhattan for the Westminster Kennel Club. So
that's right.
Look forward to that. All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you guys next week. Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means, and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.